Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome, everyone, to episode 122 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we're going to say goodbye to some of the Western Conference lottery teams who have already been eliminated from playoff contention. Before we get underway, wanted to remind you that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handle, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. We'd love any feedback. We're being hosted this year on FanRag Sports, so check them out on Twitter at FanRag Sports and for their NBA content at FRS Hoops with a Z. Joining me today, as always, is my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
So much college basketball, Brian. I can't. It's so bad, yet still so compelling.
Yeah. Oh, man. It's terrible. I've been reminded, because I don't really watch it all that much, especially because Georgetown has sucked for the last decade, that I haven't missed anything, and I'm very good with my plan to just continue not watching college basketball until March Madness.
It's really brutal. Whenever people say, "Oh, in college they actually play defense," I just start to laugh internally while I cry on the outside, because it's such a bad take.
Just because the players continue to miss shots does not mean they're playing good defense.
Right.
One does not equal the other.
Yeah.
But it has been a fun couple days of college basketball, even though work has been horrendous. So shout out to anyone in the industry who's had to work during the tournament, and prayers up to you guys. Hope you get some rest after this weekend, because it's been a madhouse, especially after Friday night's big upset, which we'll touch on at the end of the episode. But Mort, before we hit the Western Conference teams that we are going to say goodbye to today, we need to touch on the Warriors briefly, just because that's been the big news of the week. It's like them and the Celtics are in a one-upsmanship. Like, who can get more injured? Because the Celtics, you know, Gordon Hayward, obviously, very beginning of the year. Marcus Smart is now undergoing surgery on his hands, going to be out 6 to 8 weeks. Kyrie's dealing with some knee soreness. Al Horford is out, too. The Warriors come out and say, all right, not only is Steph Curry out with an ankle injury, now Klay Thompson has a fractured right thumb, and Kevin Durant is out for at least the next 2 weeks with a rib injury, an incomplete rib cartilage fracture, which I don't know what that means, but it sounds really painful.
Yeah, it does.
Medically speaking, ouch.
Yeah. So that's the layman's term. Yeah.
Right. So, Mort, a couple weeks ago, we talked about Steph's ankle and how if we were worried about the Warriors, and we said, no, as long as he's back by the playoffs, it doesn't really matter. Right. Now you've got three of the big four on the sidelines. The playoffs are a month away. On a scale of 1 to 10, where's your concern for the Warriors?
Three of the best four, you know, the three best of them. Yeah.
Right.
I'm nervous a little bit because, for one, they haven't really stepped up either. We were talking about now that they need to get their momentum under them, and they didn't, and now they're injured, so now it's going to be even tougher. Mm-hmm. I'm seeing that door starting to creak open bit by bit.
Yeah.
And Houston still looks amazing.
Yep.
So this is a year where I'm slightly concerned if I'm a Warriors fan, and that I might look stupid in a couple months. They might blow through everyone in the playoffs and just go perfect all the way and make me look like a dumbass. And that wouldn't be the first time. But as it is right now, those injuries are, concerning. Especially because they've just been so lackadaisical all throughout the year.
Yeah.
This is just not a good mix.
Right. Yeah, I think that's I'm not like penciling the Warriors out of the finals. I mean,
right.
I think until, you know, until we see how they, well, frankly, until we see what they come into the playoffs with, like if Klay is still out once the playoffs start, which he says he's not going to be. He says he should be back by the end of the month. But, you know, if Durant like has played two games by the time the playoffs start, it might take those guys a game or two to get back up to speed, which is not good, because look at, you know, the 3 through 10 seeds in the West have basically been in playoff mode for a month already. Like, they, every game is a must win for every one of those teams. And by and large, all of those teams have gone off on like massive winning streaks. You know, the Thunder are on a 5-game winning streak. The Blazers are on an 11-game winning streak. The Jazz, who are the 7 seed, who if the playoffs started today would be playing the Warriors, have won 8 straight. The Spurs are the 8 seed right now. Kawhi Leonard could still return. We don't know. Like, he was allegedly targeting this past Thursday as his return, which got pushed back. But, you know, it usually you see a 7 or an 8 seed and you're like, all right, whatever, I can kind of coast through that first round matchup. That's not going to be the case this year, especially if Kawhi comes back for the Spurs and they end up in that 7 or 8 spot. Like, the Jazz, I mean, they are monsters right now. So, I'm still, I don't care who ultimately the Warriors play in that first round. I'm still most likely going to pick the Warriors. But like you, yeah, that door is opening, especially because the Warriors are now 2.5 back of the Rockets. I mean, that's gone. Like, home court advantage, the Rockets are going to have it. I'm confident enough to say that the Warriors, like, they're just not going to push any of these guys to come back earlier than they need to.
No,
just to fight.
And they shouldn't.
Right.
Like, let's be fair. They shouldn't.
Yeah, so. Absolutely not. All right. Well, glad to see we are mildly panicked about them. Obviously, that's going to be one of the biggest storylines to track over the final few weeks of the regular season, along with this ridiculous Western Conference playoff race and, of course, the tank race. So we need to start shouting out some of the tankers, Mort, because we're not going to be talking about them all that much between now and the draft lottery. So we came up, I mean, you know, obviously we needed to talk about them anyway, but we decided we wanted to do a segment similar to what the Inside the NBA guys do with Gone Fishing. Obviously, we don't have Photoshop because we're a podcast, so that complicates matters. And we were trying to come up with a name for the segment. I threw out a couple of very terrible ideas, and then Mort, you, with a stroke of genius, came up with...
Bye, Felicia!
Oh, it's so good. So today, we're going to say bye, Felicia, to the Memphis Grizzlies, Phoenix Suns, Dallas Mavericks, Sacramento Kings, all of whom have already been eliminated from playoff contention. We're going to save the Lakers, and then we can't do the other Western Conference teams, because that's going to come down to the final day of the regular season, most likely. So, Mort, let's start with the Memphis Grizzlies, who right now have the worst record in the NBA at 18-50. They have lost 19 straight games. Just a masterclass of tanking from the Grizzlies.
I feel so bad for Marc Gasol. He's got to be so pissed right now.
So let's start with Marc Gasol, because, you know, a month ago the trade deadline was coming. The Grizzlies were going nowhere. We said, look, Tyreke Evans is going to be a free agent, unrestricted free agent this summer. Marc Gasol is going to be an unrestricted free agent next summer. Probably time to trade one of those guys. And the Grizzlies said, no, we're good. We're not going to do that. Did they screw up by standing pat at the deadline?
Usually during spring, which is just right around the corner here, we are in spring right now. It's March. You have spring cleaning. Mm-hmm. And Memphis just did not take advantage. They still have a dirty ass house. I would say yes, they did definitely waste a perfectly timely opportunity to trade Marc Gasol, possibly even Mike Conley, even though he was injured. But it depends on the return, because those guys are so good and mean so much to the franchise that I understand that they would not accept any low ball offers. Yeah. So if all that came in was lowball, then fine, it makes sense. I also think that question changes a little bit depending on where they land in the draft, because even if they finish with the worst record, they're only secured the top fourth, you know, the fourth pick. And if they drop down to the fourth, that changes things, because this is a top two player draft or a two player draft, and then there's a significant drop off. Like, if they get a Luka Doncic or a DeAndre Ayton, yeah, it's definitely, I mean, it's time. It's then you flip the page and you go, you know what? We're building around this guy and we are trying to get whatever we can of young assets and draft picks for Gasol and Conley. And then we'll take the heat. We'll be awful for 5 years, but that presents the best opportunity for us going forward. That's what you do.
Yeah.
But if you end up with Marvin Bagley or Jaren Jackson, both could be excellent players, don't get me wrong, but I don't think they have the same ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
Jackson is even further away from being that guy. Then you can bring him along slowly and then still go one last bout with Gasol and Conley, I suppose. But, I mean, I would prefer on a personal level to just blow it up and mm-hmm. start over. I think the age of Gasol is really problematic.
Right.
They're not going to be able to get anyone in free agency anyway.
Right.
Because they're capped out thanks to the Chandler Parsons contract. So everything is just, it's bad. It's really bad in Memphis.
Yeah. I mean, right. So I'm going to kind of go off a couple points you brought up there. So in terms of Memphis' plan this summer, you think it basically comes down to what happens during the draft lottery? Like if they get a top two pick, yeah, it's time to blow it up because we have a franchise superstar in the making. Like the timeline of whoever they draft, whether it's Ayton or Doncic, both of mm-hmm. them are 19, I believe.
Yeah.
So yeah, a 33-year-old Marc Gasol and even a 30-year-old Mike Conley.
30-year-old.
Yeah, it's, I mean, you know, by the time Ayton and Doncic are ready to really make moves in the Western Conference, Gasol is going to be on his last legs, and Conley's mm-hmm. going to be 32, 33. So, yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I think if they get a top two pick, take a stick of dynamite to this team. Who do you think they should take? Let's say they get the number one pick.
Yeah.
Do you think they should take Ayton as their way of giving them, like, all right, we have Ayton, now we can trade Gasol because we have our franchise center still?
Or no, because that would be drafting for need. You'd never mm-hmm. draft for need. That's what free agency is there for. I would still take Ayton, and that's because I've basically flip-flopped on him and Doncic. Doncic is great, but Ayton is just so athletic, so big, has that wide frame, and I think he's got more potential as a player. I don't think he's as smart a player, obviously, because Doncic is just, he's basically, like, has a Magic Johnson intelligence on the basketball court, which can't be measured.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think, like, as we talked about with Chris Stone on the last episode, I do think that Doncic is going to be more athletic than he showed, because his body has not yet filled out and whatnot.
Mm.
But then it hit me, Ayton has not filled out yet.
Right.
Ayton is not even 20. Ayton is going to get bigger, stronger, and he's going to be an absolute animal.
Mm-hmm.
And given that he's an elite rebounder, and that he can shoot the basketball, and he can play on the inside, and he can score from the mid-range area as well, and he can hit three throws, you're looking at a guy who really does not have any major deficiencies in his offensive repertoire mm-hmm. and is an elite rebounder. Yeah, he's got issues defensively, but those are, because of his athleticism, an area where you can correct some things. Like, he can get significantly better in that department.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm on Ayton now, but honestly, I could flip-flop 30 times from now until the draft. Because both, I mean, you can't go wrong. I just have Ayton 1 right now. I had Doncic all throughout the season, and it's a moment thing. I mean, you can ask me tomorrow, it might be Doncic.
Right.
Regardless, Brian, but I mean, yeah, right now it's Ayton.
Yeah, so either way, you're saying they should not factor Gasol into who they take. Like, they should not say, we have Marc Gasol, so we can't take DeAndre Ayton. If we think Ayton's the best player, we should take him.
Right, that would be so dumb. That would be something the Bulls would do.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Are you concerned at all, Mort, about, I know you said, like, yeah, his defense is correctable, but, like, Buffalo seemed to have a pretty good answer against Arizona and Ayton in the first round of the tournament. Did that raise any red flags for you?
Yeah, well, it's always been a red flag. It has. I mean, he is just not as engaged on that end of the floor, and he's still like trying to understand schemes. But I think he improved as the season progressed. Early on in the year, he was you had video clips where he was just standing next to an opponent guard who was like 5'11", who took a layup right next to him, and that was because he just didn't recognize really how big he was. Like that was a moment of him where he just like didn't have any grasp at all that I'm actually 7'1" with a 7'5" wingspan. But as the season progressed, he took those chances a little bit more, started recognizing, oh, you know what? I can actually jump up and block this shot. I can go all the way up here. I can actually affect the game defensively when I do this and that. But it's lapses, and you know, you don't turn the page permanently from one day to the other. That's impossible. So I think it's a journey. And I think he's on the right path. But those concerns are still there. Absolutely, they are.
But it's not Jahlil Okafor 2.0.
No.
Good. All right. So we mentioned Tyreke Evans earlier, and you also mentioned how the Grizzlies are in cap hell already. With, yeah. I mean, Conley is going to make $30.5 million next year. Parsons makes 24.1. Gasol makes 24.1. So if they stand pat with those three guys alone, throw in Jamichael Green, Ben McLemore, you know, a couple other guys. They're already above, their guaranteed total is already $101.1 million, not factoring in whatever first-round pick they have. So they're already above the projected salary cap, which is $101 million, which means all they're going to have is the non-taxpayer mid-level exception, which is going to be somewhere in the $8.5 million range. Do you think that's enough to keep Tyreke Evans around, and should they re-sign him?
Well, I think it could be enough for them because he kind of they gave him new life, and you know he attended college in Memphis as well. So I think there is some goodwill on that end, unless of course someone else comes in with a ridiculous offer. But considering how few teams have legit cap space, and I think a lot of teams would also be wary of the fact that Tyreke has played well just for just one season now. I don't think that's enough to hand him out like a 4-year big ass deal. I don't think that's enough. So I think Memphis definitely has a shot at retaining him for that deal. And whether they should or not depends on what they decide. Because if Gasol and Conley are retained, which is what I think will happen, regardless of what happens with the draft, I think they will keep Gasol and Conley, then yes, then it would make sense. Because if you have those three guys healthy for a full year and you throw in like the number one and number two pick, that would at least take them a little bit further. The problem there becomes they miss out on the lottery next year, 2019, and then they will have to wait a full year to 2020 to get that secondary core piece to go with an Aiden or a Doncic. So, I mean, I'm never a fan of playing both sides of the fence at the same time, but I think Memphis is going to try that, and you know what can you do?
Yeah, I totally I agree with not wanting them to do it, but I think you're right. They're not going to trade Gasol, at least not at the start. I mean, barring a blockbuster offer, I don't see them trading Gasol. And what you alluded to is that they owe their first round pick to Boston next year, unless it's between 1 and 8. So if they are the number 10 pick, that goes to Boston. So that could give them incentive to tank next year. But then again, if the pick doesn't convey next year, it's protected 1-6 in 2020 and unprotected in 2021. So if you're Memphis and you're looking at what may be a multi-year rebuild, you might just want to get that out of the way when it, you know, when it's what the worst you can give up is the number 9 pick. Whereas, like, God forbid it rolls over to 2021 and you give up the number 1 pick that year. Like, that would be the worst possible scenario. So, yeah, I would guess, I don't know if that's the mid-level is going to be enough to retain Tyreke. I think it probably will, just because, you know, you look at a guy, I think Lou Williams is really going to be, he kind of set the benchmark of, like, what we should expect for contracts this summer. He signed an extension worth less than what the mid-level exception is projected to be. And right now, I mean, given how well Lou Williams has played this year, I think you would expect Tyreek to be right in that range, if not a little bit less. So, yeah, no. I think if Memphis is willing to do a full mid-level for Tyreek, that's probably enough to keep him around.
I would agree.
So that brings us to a last question about Memphis, Mort. Are they basically screwed until Chandler Parsons' contract comes off the books, which happens after the 2019-2020 season?
Yep.
Yeah. It sucks.
I mean, look, there's no other way to say it. I mean, yeah. but then again, I'm also not a fan of cap space. Remember, I don't think cap space is the way to plan ahead. Mm-hmm. You know, you have teams like the Bulls, the Knicks, the Lakers, who always focuses on, oh, we have cap space by this and that year.
Right.
And then you can completely flunk out of that free agent class and get like a D-level player in terms of, you know, however you rank them and classify them in tiers. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just not good enough. And then you overpay a guy significantly and you lock yourself into bad deals. I hate free agency as a method of planning. Like, mm-hmm. if you have a great young core and you have cap space, now that's when you hit it. That's right. Fine. But if you are putting all of your eggs in that basket, no, don't do it. It's dumb.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, right. I don't know who they would even be able to lure if they had cap space, just because that team.
Right.
Like, they just don't offer what? Come play with 33-year-old Marc Gasol and 30-year-old Mike Conley. Like, it's just not as enticing as come join the Lakers, who have $60 million in cap space. Come join a Sixers team that's got $30 million in cap space and Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. Like, there are other teams with more enticing pitches. So
I would agree. Like, okay, there's this thing though. If they get Doncic, yeah. I would assume that they would like that there would be some big men out there on the market that would go, oh, you know what? I can add 4 or 5 points on my average just by playing next to Doncic. I'll do that. Right. And conversely, if they pick Aiden, there'd be a guy like a point guard out there going, oh, you know what? I can add 4 or 5 assists a game, mm-hmm. just based on playing with this guy. So I do think that there will be a market, because if they have money and they have a scenario where certain guys can benefit from the mm-hmm. new rookie. But otherwise, I agree. Like, they would not be attracting anyone of major significance.
Yeah, it feels like their time to make, at least start to make moves, is the summer of 2019, when, assuming Gasol decides his player option, he comes off the books. They only have $57.6 million in guaranteed contracts, all of which is just Conley and Parsons. But then Parsons only has one more year. Mm. Conley, he can opt out after 2019-2020. I can't imagine he's going to do so.
Oh, no, no.
He's not. $34.5 million, no. But
not at that age.
Yeah, but it feels like their best move, we're basically saying, is hopefully get a top two pick. Try to bring back Tyreek. Just roll it back with this same core next year. Hope for better health. And then, you know, see how the first couple months of the season goes. You can reevaluate at the trade deadline. Maybe trade Marc Gasol then. Maybe trade Tyreek then. But you're kind of stuck because of the Parsons contract. Mm-hmm. All right, so let's move on then. Let's go to the Phoenix Suns, Mort, who are thankfully have a slightly sunnier outlook, both short and long term. Right now, they
that was
are...
a, that was a Kelly Scaletta pun right there.
Oh, yeah, that was. God damn it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, everyone. So they are right now tied in terms of games back with Memphis. They are 19-51. Memphis would be the number one overall, or have the number one overall odds, just by percentage, but very close. I think the first thing we need to say is they have Devin Booker, who at least has all-star potential. I mean, we're not going to fall into like the analytics Twitter debate of, is he actually good? Yeah, if nothing else, he's a very explosive yeah. scorer, and he has a long-term role on this team. Yes, he's good.
Oh, yeah.
But let's talk about their point guard spot, because they traded a second-round pick at the trade deadline for Elfrid Payton, who's going to be a restricted free agent. Do you think he's worth re-signing? And if not, do they need to target point guard in the draft?
He's worth re-signing if the price is right. Remember when we had the episode where we discussed restricted free agents?
Mm-hmm.
And we were both not very hot on the idea of re-signing Elfrid Payton to big money.
Yep.
But if he came at a decent price and was willing to back off both guard spots, then you could argue it would be a worthy investment, assuming, of course, the money was right, so probably around the mid-level exception area. Then again, though, why would he take that at that age?
Right.
So, but, you know, he might be forced to if no one else steps up to the plate. And yeah. I could imagine that would be the case because he's not a strong shooter. And right. that is just the alpha omega today. In terms of the draft, God, that's hard because, look, they have this... If currently they're slotted to draft second, so that's Doncic or Aiden. And at that point, I go Aiden for sure. I mean, he would just fit into that system so well. And that would just be beautiful. Like Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton running the break. Yeah. I mean, look, let's be honest. That would be ridiculous. And then they have the 15th pick and potentially the 16th from Milwaukee. The 15th pick is from Miami. The Milwaukee pick, you had it right before. It was protected 10th. No, it was protected 1 to 10th and 17th and onwards, right?
Right. So the only way they get that pick is if it falls between 11 and 16.
Correct. Yeah.
I mean, Milwaukee is going to make the playoffs. Like, Detroit's too far gone at this point. So as long as Philly doesn't slip, which is probably not going to happen given how easy its schedule is, the number 8 seed in the West, whoever that may be, I don't think Milwaukee's going to jump them just because all of these teams are jostling for, you know, they have to win every night. So it seems like Milwaukee is basically locked into either 15 or 16, and Miami's going to be the other one. So, yeah, they're going to get some combination of 15 and 16 from both of those teams.
So that makes the number 2, number 15, number 16, and then the 32nd pick as well, which is sort of a pseudo first rounder.
Right.
That's a lot of draft picks. And in that 15-16 area, you could look at a point guard, but at that point, Colin Sexton and Trae Young are both probably off the table. So who do you go for? Do you go for a shy Gilgeous Alexander from Kentucky? I mean, it's possible, but he's also coming in with some jump-shotting issues. I mean, he shoots it well, but not with enough volume, so you don't really know if he's a good shooter or not. And it's not really a strong point guard crop this year.
Right.
But I'm doing a piece on the Suns as we speak, actually. And Ryan McDonough is very open to the idea of trading some of these picks for established players. Yeah, you're nodding, or not nodding, you're shaking your head right now. I am too in that piece that I'm going to publish eventually. But I do have a theory as to why. One thing is, he wants to get older. That's what he said. He wants to get older. Sure. I think there could be a different theory at play here. When you look at their recent draft history, it hasn't been stellar. Yeah. When you look at what they gave up for the 8th pick to take Marquise Chris in 2016, that was a lot. They gave up number 13, 28th, and the rights to Bogdan Bogdanović.
Right.
Like, that's one hell of a gamble, and so far, it's not paid off. Marquise Chris has, quite frankly, not been a good NBA player. Yeah, with the 4th pick that year, they drafted Dragan Bender. He's in the final ends of his second year, and he's yet to crack, you know, a PER of more than 7.
It's not great.
It really isn't. It's quite bad, actually. Oh, you know what? You know what? We should celebrate. Because I'm just looking at the updated numbers for Phoenix. Dragan Bender is at 7.0 PER.
Hey! Oh, congrats, yeah. Dragan.
That's amazing. That's just... that's eight points below the league average.
Right. Yeah.
So, and Josh Jackson is, you know, he's probably the best of those three. But he's not exactly a home run. He's not a great shooter. He can't hit free throws. He's always going to be somewhat limited as an energy guy running the floor. He's not going to be a pure shooter at any point of his career. So the theory here is Ryan McDonough and the Suns staff might actually be a little bit afraid of drafting. because they haven't hit home in a while. The last one they hit was Devin Booker.
Yeah. I mean, that would be such a dumb reason to avoid. Like, we don't want these cost-controlled assets because we screwed up a couple times. Like, if Sam Hinkie abandoned the process because he drafted Jahlil Okafor, that would have been the dumbest shit imaginable. Like, this is... Phoenix is still very much... You have Devin Booker. Again, he is one... You know, you have one guy who you can build around. You don't know about any of these other guys. And I was going to ask you, Mort, like, Dragan Bender and Marquese Chriss. Yeah, they... Two top 10 picks in 2016. We haven't seen enough out of either of these guys, and now they're halfway through their rookie contracts.
Yeah.
Do you think either of those guys are, you know, do they have the potential still to become, like, foundational pieces in Phoenix? Or are we, you know, is it time to start considering them, like, complementary guys, but you don't want to, like, build your team around them?
So I'm glad you asked me that, because there are a couple ways to look at this. One thing is that if you are developing them as complementary pieces around Booker, then yes, I think there's certainly potential for them to reach that type of ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't. But in terms of Marquese Chriss, especially when they gave up what they did,
mm-hmm.
knowing full well how good Bogdanović was, right. Everyone knew that at that point in time.
Yeah.
I think the expectation of Marquese Chriss is he should be significantly better. Like, he was supposed to be the Sean Kemp to Gary Payton's, you know, to Gary Payton. And that's not happening right now. So mm-hmm. I think they are in the process of adjusting their expectations
mm-hmm.
With those two guys. I don't think it would be a wise idea to give up, especially Dragan Bender, because we've seen some improvements from him that, to his credit, does not necessarily show up in the stat sheet. Him moving extremely well defensively, laterally, on smaller guards, and just being able to stick with smaller players with that big frame. And, I mean, least we forget, this is a 20-year-old guy who's 7'1", and so far he's made 98 threes. Mm-hmm. So there's certainly some potential there that could be mined a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
But the door's closing on them to break out as these supposed stars that their draft slots would indicate.
Right.
I'm not really satisfied if I'm Phoenix with those picks, but I'm also not ready to give them up, because then you would have given a whole bunch of stuff up for nothing. Right. And that's just not worth it. They were shopping Marquese Chriss at the deadline, which I think is just way too soon to give up on someone who's that age.
Mm-hmm.
You may be disappointed in what he gives up, but he's so young, and you invested so much to get him. Now right. you have to give yourself the chance to see what he can become. And I mean, it's not a coincidence that I titled the article that'll come out, "Phoenix Should Stop Being Their Own Worst Enemy."
Yeah.
Because that's really how they operate. They fall upon their own feet all the time. And Chris is an example of that. Bender is sort of an example, but he's at least got more to build on than Bender does.
Mm-hmm.
So to answer your question, I'm not satisfied with either. I don't think they have the potential to become fully fledged stars anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I think that window is certainly closing at an alarming rate, but I do think that they can become something as long as the team readjusts that expectation.
Gotcha. Are you higher on one of them than the other at this point?
Bender, for the reasons I stated. Marquese yep. Chriss has just looked so disinterested
yeah.
all year long, and he's really been struggling. He was a guy who came in and actually made a little bit of noise. Let me just look up something here. Yeah, his rookie season was a lot better.
Yeah.
He even had a PER of 12, which is okay for someone being 19 and coming in mm-hmm. in his first season. Right now, it's under 10, and he's not efficient, and he's shooting the ball a lot worse, free throws a lot worse. He's not really rounding out his game. And this is where I'm kind of just concerned, because of the four complete seasons that they've had combined, you know, two seasons for Chris and two seasons for Bender,
mm-hmm.
only one, and that was last year, Chris's rookie season, have one of them had a PER of over 10.
Oof.
So yeah. That's just a major problem for Phoenix going forward. They need more production out of those two. But again, if they're willing to wait it out, and it indicates that they wouldn't because Chris was shopped, then I think it would be worth hanging on to them. But we'll see what happens. I wouldn't be surprised to see one of those guys traded at the draft.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, like package a Chris plus 15 or 16 to move up to 8, 9, 10 range.
Maybe, and like that would make sense. If they get like an Aiden at number one or number two, mm-hmm. and then a Mikal Bridges at that point, I mean,
yeah.
Jesus, that would make a lot of sense. The problem with Phoenix, though, is this as well. They have TJ Warren. He's right. also a non-shooter. Mm-hmm. They have too many guys who can't shoot the ball.
Mm-hmm.
TJ Warren, Josh Jackson, Marquise mm-hmm. Chris. Bendry's getting there, but he's still not exactly there yet. And then they traded for Elfrid Payton.
Right.
So I'm not really sure what they're trying to do.
They're trying to play basketball. And I don't think
they are. Yeah.
Trying to play basketball like it's the 1980s.
Apparently. And it's not working. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah. Yeah, right. I mean, to your point, they don't have a single player on their roster shooting above 40% from three-point range. Which is
correct.
Not ideal, considering they have the worst three-point percentage in the league at 33.6% as a team.
And they're 23rd in the league in makes as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, some of this is definitely due to shoddy roster construction, as you mentioned, just having too many guys who can't shoot. And, yeah, I mean, that's a concern with re-signing Payton as well. I totally agree. Like, Booker's a good shooter. I mean, he's hitting 38.3% from three this year, which is totally fine.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, like outside of that, I mean, let's just go right into this. So they re-signed TJ Warren to an extension, but Josh Jackson in theory plays the same position.
Mm-hmm.
What are they doing there? Like, do you think the Warren thing was basically what we've advocated for Blake Griffin and others? Like, you just re-signed him to not lose him as an asset.
I think that was plan B.
Yeah.
I think plan A was, let's re-sign him, see if he learns to shoot, and if not, we know that he's competent enough offensively
mm-hmm.
to be movable. And mm-hmm. to his credit, like TJ Warren is averaging damn near 20 this year. So he can score the basketball, he just can't shoot it.
Mm-hmm.
That's obviously a major concern, but he can score, so he's going to have some level of attractiveness to other teams.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree, and he's put up huge numbers this year. Like he got off to a really good start last year, had that hand injury I think toward the end of November, missed a month and kind of never got back on track. But yeah, he's averaging almost 20 a game this year. Like he's putting up career best numbers mm-hmm. almost across the board. So yeah, I mean, I think they have to be pleasantly surprised with that. He's turned out to be a solid complement to Booker, at least in this rebuilding year. I don't know, I mean, I think it'll basically come down to, like, which one of TJ Warren and Josh Jackson develops a jump shot first.
Yeah.
And right now, TJ Warren has the lead, but Josh Jackson's the better defender of the two, or he has the potential to be, if nothing else. So, yeah, it's really, I think you really nailed it, Mort. Like, the roster construction here is just so confusing that outside of Booker, I don't really know who of any of these guys are a long-term piece. So that goes into this question then. Booker's eligible for an extension this summer. If you're Phoenix, do you max him out? No questions asked?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so too.
I mean, look, we've been talking about players who are overhyped and doesn't deliver, blah, 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 blah. You know what? Devin Booker is 21 years old.
Mm-hmm.
He's already got more than 4,000 career points. He's a strong shooter. He's a strong pick and roll player. He's a developing defender, developing rebounder. And honestly, I think his rebounding has been surprisingly good this year. Like, he's taking on more of a scoring responsibility and has done that while also increasing his assist rate and his rebounding rate. That's spectacular. He's even getting to the line a whole lot. At worst case, you've got a more efficient Carmelo Anthony going on here. A guy who can get you like 25, 27 points a night, but more efficiently.
Mm-hmm.
You max that out, yeah. Even if he's got some weaknesses. Yeah. Even if he's not, you know, prime Kobe, who right. can take you to the promised land, it's okay because yeah. where's his major weakness offensively? It's not there. Defensively, that can be worked on.
Yeah, right. But given how much potential he's shown in these first couple seasons, yeah, I think he's a no question max guy. I mean, the only hesitation would be, well, do you want to save that cap space for the summer of 2019, keep his cheaper cap hold on the books, you know, try to get someone in there? But
maybe. I mean, look, that depends. If Booker is willing to take a discount by extending early, some players are,
mm-hmm.
then you go for it. But right. Going the restricted free agency route in the same manner that the Spurs did with Kawhi would be extremely clever. So I wouldn't fault the Suns at all for taking that approach.
I mean, it would be clever if he's okay to it or if he's open to it, but it's also risky because then he can go and turn around and sign a 3-year or a 4-year deal with a 4th-year player option, sign that offer sheet elsewhere. You know, the Sean, the Brooklyn Nets special where it's like they, you know, throw in a trade kicker, just make it as awful as possible to match. And if you do, then, like, you know, you're in a Gordon Hayward Utah situation where, like, shit, maybe we just should have given this guy, you know, the 4 or 5 year max right away. Instead, we pissed him off, and now he's going to leave us a year earlier than he could have otherwise. So it's...
Well, communication is key, right?
Right, yeah. I mean, it's a tricky... If he's willing to do it, go for it. Like, if he's willing to defer that payment for a year. But, like, it's a risk on his end, too. Because what if he gets hurt? In the 2018-19 season, does he get a max deal if he tears his ACL or God forbid, he tears his Achilles? So,
well, we'll see, because that depends on what Zach LaVine is going to get this summer.
Yeah.
And also, here's a benefit as well. Booker's game is not heavily reliant on athleticism.
Right.
Like, he's a smart under-the-rim player.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, regardless, we agree he's worth keeping around. He's a building block. Yeah. And now, you know, on the point guard note, like, they do have Brandon Knight. He's missed the whole season with a torn ACL, but they have him signed for 2 more years. So, like,
they do
have options there. It seems like, I mean, Alex Len is going to come off the books. He's going to be an unrestricted free agent because he took the qualifying offer this year. It seems like his fate is basically, if they draft Ayton, peace out, Alex Len.
I think that's going to be the case regardless. Yeah. I don't think he wants to stick around anymore.
It's probably fair. Yeah.
Yeah.
So on that note, let's move to the Dallas Mavericks. Speaking of centers who took the qualifying offer, let's move to the Dallas Mavericks and Nerlens Noel, who, again, we've talked about this before, but he allegedly turned down a 4-year, $70 million deal from the Mavericks. Did not find any offer sheets to his liking last year. Took the qualifying offer. Fell out of Rick Carlisle's rotation for the first month or so, first month and a half of the season. Then underwent surgery on his thumb. Missed about 2.5 months. But he has come back in recent weeks and is starting to play really well again. Mm-hmm. So, the timing... Overall, this has been a terrible season for him just because of how the Carlisle stuff went, but like he's starting to show he's not a complete lost cause just in the nick of time. Like against the Raptors, he had 6 points, 6 rebounds, 5 steals, 3 blocks, 3 assists in 27 minutes.
Yep.
You know, he's getting that like poor man's Tyson Chandler rep all over again. So more.
Well, I don't think he's ever lost it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would say, given how poorly the first month and a half of the season went, I think there was legitimate concern of, like, maybe this guy's just a total dickhead. And, like, maybe you just don't want him on your team. Like, if he's clashing with Carlisle this much, like, maybe, you know...
Both could be true.
Yeah, right. I mean, it was like you gave him the benefit of the doubt for being frustrated in Philly because of how many centers they had and there wasn't enough playing time to go around. That's fine. But, like, when he's not getting minutes ahead of some of the centers that they've been playing this year in Dallas, then it was like, well,
yeah,
maybe this is a Nerlens thing. Maybe it wasn't just Philly. Maybe, you know, now he's playing with Rick Carlisle, one of the most respected coaches in the league. He's playing for a Mavericks team that, aside from the last year or so, has been a Western Conference powerhouse for the last decade and a half. There was reason for concern, like to the point where I thought there was no way he's getting the same offer Dallas offered him last summer.
No, but he's not. What I'm saying is, I don't think he ever lost the potential to be as influential as Tyson Chandler.
Yeah.
But it's certainly possible that Nerlens is just a problematic player to have on the roster. Both of those things can be true. Whatever he gets offered this year, and it's certainly not going to be $70 million,
right.
I would probably suggest him to take it and then prove it. Like, if he can get a one-year deal somewhere that pays him like $12 million, but it's one of those prove-it deals,
yeah,
fine, go for it.
Yeah, I think his best-case scenario is kind of the best-case scenario for a lot of these second-, third-, fourth-tier guys is, like, the Lakers don't get both of Paul George and LeBron James. They have, whatever, $30 million of cap space left over. Say they re-sign Randall for 15 or 20. Mm. And, you know, get shit, even if they get Paul George, he's 30. Then Nerlens can come in, swoop in, take 1 year, $10 million, take that leftover cap space. As you said, more on a prove it deal, because the Lakers are going to want to preserve whatever cap space they have left long term. So, yeah, I mean, it feels like his best option is going to be one of these 1 year prove it deals. But do you think there's any chance he re-signs in Dallas, or is that ship sailed?
I think that ship sailed. I think he's going back to the Eastern Conference, honestly. Mm. I wouldn't be surprised at all if he ends up on the Bulls, because Robin Lopez seems to be the guy that's going to be traded this summer.
Mm-hmm.
They're in that rebuilding process, and Nerlens just fits that age profile. And we've seen before that, you know, Gar Foreman and John Paxson just do not give Fred Hoiberg any shot of playing hoyball by signing Rajon Rondo and Dwayne Wade that same summer. So, you know, I don't think that they even consider that at all. And Nerlens Noel would not fit into that picture, because so far we've seen the Bulls actually play pretty well when they play Portis at the five, and they have all the five out playing the setup, so everyone on the court can shoot. But I'm not gonna put it past them to sign a guy who's ultimately limited to sticking around the rim.
Nor would I. At least he'd be younger and more athletic. They are finally living up to that moniker,
I guess. But the problem here is, the reason he fits that age profile is because they mostly draft seniors. Not good seniors. Right. So, right.
Yeah. Shout out to Denzel Valentine.
Yep.
What about Dennis Smith Jr., Mort? What have you seen out of him this season? And do you think he's the franchise point guard that they build him to be coming into the year?
Well, you know what? When I saw that question, I thought it was a little unfair, because, you know, rookie point guards, that's always so tough. He started the season off at the age of 19, you know, and learning an NBA offense and learning to be the point guard and have the ball in his hands so much, that's just tricky on its own. The fact that he's right now averaging 15 points, 4 rebounds, and 5 assists in just under 30 minutes a game, that's a positive. That's a major positive for me. He's not shooting well, but that's okay. It's a learning season. Dallas isn't going anywhere. I think he's going to improve dramatically. This is one of those guys where you go, oh, that's the Kemba Walker thing, right? Where he starts out his career having a couple of years where he just looks abysmal, and then suddenly there's like an aha moment and he starts to get it because the experience kicks in.
Yeah. I'm not concerned at all about him. I mean, look at who he's been playing with all year outside of Dirk and Harrison Barnes. Like, they set him, I don't want to say they set him up to fail necessarily, but like, he would have had to be the LeBron James of point guards to put up good, efficient numbers on this team. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I think you're right. It's hard to say whether he's, like, I don't know that he's the next Dirk necessarily. Like, I don't know that the Mavericks should be planning their franchise with him as their best player, but I think he could at least develop into the starting point guard on a championship team one day. I don't think that ceiling is gone just because he had one season where he shot under 40% from the field.
Oh, yeah, great. I mean, look, the athleticism is unquestionable.
Yeah.
So, and that alone just adds so many layers of potential.
Right. Yeah, like, as, I mean, this is, it's frankly, it's good that they've let him take his lumps. Like, they knew this season was kind of a throw it out season anyway. So it's, like, good that they just stuck him in the starting lineup and said, like, look, just get your experience. You know, there's no point in us trying to compete this year. Let's let you learn now, and then by the time we're, you know, hopefully we get a good pick this year, by the time we start rounding out our roster again, you'll actually have the experience to that we need.
I would agree.
So Wes Matthews is likely out for the year with a stress fracture, I believe, or some sort of, yeah, I believe it was a stress fracture. So he is now effectively a lock to pick up his player option for next season, which is $18.6 million. But the Mavs are still going to have a boatload of cap space outside of that. What do you think they should do with that, Mort? Should they be going after any notable free agents, or should they be trying to do what you've advocated for the Bulls, kind of use that salary cap space to absorb bad contracts as long as they can get some picks and young players in return?
Well, no, because they need a power forward, because Dirk is on his way out, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, and this is where the free agency that comes in terms of, this is where you can sign for need.
Mm-hmm.
And you need a four. Mm-hmm. And in your outline in the email, you mentioned two names, Aaron mm-hmm. Gordon and Julius Randle.
Mm-hmm.
Like, either would be mm-hmm. good. I'm leaning Gordon.
Yeah.
Because I feel that he's got that extra layer of potential because of the athleticism and defensive intensity that he has. But I would be in no way disappointed if I'm a Mavs fan and I get Julius Randle.
Oh, no. Me neither.
I mean, I would love that. So yeah. Either way, whoever you get, I mean, I would just go after one of those two.
Yeah. I mean, I think Gordon just has, right now, because he's a better three-point shooter,
yeah,
just fits with the way today's game is played. But that said, Randle has been on an absolute monster tear for the last month or two. So, yep. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I've seen some Lakers people on Twitter saying, like, well, you know, we can keep Randle and get Paul George and LeBron. And I'm like, how? Like, Randle's not...
Oh, yeah, no.
Like, he's getting an offer sheet this summer. I mean, cap space is limited, but there aren't that many, like, top-tier free agents available outside of, yeah, LeBron, Paul George. Boogie's coming off the Achilles injury, and you just assume he's going to resign in New Orleans. Chris Paul is going to resign in Houston. That case is closed. No point in even bringing him up. So then it's, like, Isaiah Thomas, DeAndre Jordan, Brooke Lopez. Like, they're, I mean, I feel like the next tier of guys after LeBron, Paul George, Boogie, Chris Paul, you probably want to spend your money more on an Aaron Gordon or a Julius Randle than you would,
obviously,
on a DeAndre Jordan or an Isaiah Thomas. I don't think that's necessarily a hot take. So, like, all of
that's the coldest take you could come up with.
Yeah, I feel like I'm taking crazy pills whenever I talk to these Lakers people, and they're like, "Well,
no, you're Ice Town there."
Okay, I mean, good, yeah. So, I mean, I think both of those guys. Yeah, I know restricted free agents don't often get. I mean, it usually cools the market on them if they're a restricted free agent. But we saw, like, Otto Porter got a max offer sheet last year as a restricted free agent. It happens mm-hmm. with one or two guys. Like, whichever top one or two restricted free agents didn't reach an extension, they usually end up getting paid. And I feel like Julius Randle and Aaron Gordon are those two guys this year. The Mavs, as you said, have an enormous need at the four. It's like, I expect the Mavs to lob offer sheets at one or both of those guys. I feel like Randall's probably going to come a little cheaper. I feel like Gordon's definitely going to get maxed. Randall, I'm not sure if he will.
Well, that's not a bad thing, because Randall's got playmaking abilities, and combine him with Dennis Smith. I mean, look, that's, if you go back to, you know, prime Derrick Rose and Joakim Noah, Noah was the one throwing the lobs. That turned the defenses on its head, because they just did not know what the hell was going on. Mm-hmm. That could be a similar situation. Randle from the high post, looking at Dennis Smith cutting to the basket. Good mm-hmm. Lord.
I mean, the Mavs right now are not like the Grizzlies. I mean, they have Harrison Barnes, who signed to a max deal. He's going to earn $24.1 million next season.
Yeah.
Matthews, assuming he signs in, $18.6 million. Those are the only two guys above $10 million. Dwight Powell's at $9.6 million, and then they have no one else above $5 million. So, like, they're
and in Matthews can still shoot.
Yeah, so, like, they're in good shape financially, at least, for this rebuilding era. Like, they have mostly guys on their rookie contracts, which is fine. Like, that's what you want right now. So, yeah.
Brian, I just had to interrupt you because we just had breaking news. Oh, another boy. Warrior have gone down.
No,
Omri Caspi is expected to be sidelined for a week.
Oh, my God. At this point, I feel like they're just inventing. You know how, like, tanking teams invent injuries to get their guys rest? I feel like the Warriors must be doing that at this point, right?
It was the Warriors a couple years back as well, more than a couple years back, 7 years back or something.
With Harry Barnes.
They played against Portland, and they didn't have enough. They didn't have enough players to take the floor. Yeah.
Right. Man. All right. More before we move on from the Mavs, they are right now projected to get the number 6 pick. Again, this is completely subject to change. Yeah. I mean, it's who knows where they're going to end up, but let's say they stay in that 6 to 8 range. Do you see any guys? You know, you got to assume Ayton and Doncic are off the board. Probably Michael Porter, Jaren Jackson, Marvin Bagley.
Yeah.
Do you see anyone who's like a really good fit?
I mean, look, so normally I would go Bamba.
Mm-hmm.
And he would fit Dallas pretty well, I think. But lately I've actually considered just going Carter over Bamba as well. Wendell Carter from Duke.
I love it.
Because, I mean, this dude can play some center in the Al Horford type way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's a strong passer. He can shoot. He's just way more skilled than a lot of these guys that who are projected to go higher than him. And in Dallas, skill matters.
Yeah.
So I think that would be a wonderful fit there. It might be a little bit short, but hey, I mean, in today's league, everything is small ball anyway. So Wendell Carter as the 5 man, then Julius Randle at the 4, and with Dennis Smith just being the de facto scorer,
yeah,
I kind of like it.
Yeah, if you have a Smith, Wes Matthews, Harry Barnes, Randle, and Carter.
But I mean, if they go Bamba, I won't complain. That's one hell of, I mean, that's Nerlens Noel on steroids as a shot blocker at least.
Yeah, I mean, and Smith has above average defensive potential too, so
yep,
that could be an annoying core to deal with. Yeah, I mean, I think
could.
Overall the Mavs are in much better shape than say the Grizzlies just because of where they are financially.
Right,
I think that's going to open the door for them to be. I mean, they're a team to watch this summer. Like they're, I know they haven't been a team to watch this year, but they have the potential to make some serious noise. Let's move on. Oh, sorry.
Just one final thing. If Michael Porter Jr. slips.
Oh, man.
Yeah. That could be interesting.
That'd be really interesting.
Because he could play both the 3 and small ball 4.
Yeah, as can Harry Barnes.
They're like as can Harry Barnes. Exactly.
Yeah.
Precisely. And that interchangeability, that's always one that's a lot of fun in this today's NBA climate.
Yeah, that's very true. So let's move on. Let's finish things up with the Sacramento Kings. I'm going to fire one off with a hot take here. And you mentioned this guy earlier, but is Bogdan Bogdanovic their best player right now?
Yeah, probably best established player, I want to say. Mm-hmm. I think next year that's probably going to be De'Aaron Fox.
Mm-hmm.
Buddy Hield is in there too. He's actually been quite good this year. He hasn't gotten the recognition that he deserves. But Bogdan has just been out of his mind. I mean, the way that Bogdanovic probes the defense and can manufacture shots from the mid-range. I know, mid-range shots are bad, whatever, I get it. But still, the fact that he can get one whenever he wants, that shows creativity and an ability to get shots whenever you want, which is essentially a guy controlling the offense. Mm-hmm. And that's important. So I like that that ability he has to just get to wherever he wants to be on the court. And he's strong, he's large, he can shoot it, he can pass it. He's not much of a rebounder. He's a little bit worse of a rebounder than I thought he would be.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see how that translates. But yeah, right now he's probably the best. But it's close. I mean, he's got some competition for it. I mean, already now I would go De'Aaron Fox is in the conversation.
Yeah. So let's go to De'Aaron Fox then. What have you seen out of him this year, and what do you hope to see moving forward?
Well, remember what I said, I think, 50 times last year? I said his mechanics looked okay
mm-hmm.
in terms of being a decent three-point shooter. Mm-hmm. I didn't think that he would come in and shoot 19%.
Right.
Lo and behold, he's hitting 33% on two attempts a game. So yeah. I'm glad to see that one turning true, because I had him number two on my draft board.
Man.
I had Fultz number one, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
De'Aaron Fox two, and then Donovan Mitchell third. And the Fox thing was actually the one that I was most concerned about, honestly, because everyone else had Lonzo.
Yeah.
He wasn't like D'Angelo or not D'Angelo, De'Aaron was this guy who was kind of an afterthought because, oh, he couldn't shoot.
Uh-huh.
And I was, until I started watching Kentucky last year, I was, yeah, that's, I you know, for the first quarter of the college season, I was more or less stat tracking. Mm-hmm. I was like, yep, that guy's out of the picture because he can't shoot. And then I caught the first couple of Kentucky games, and that stroke looked good. The ball just didn't go in.
Right.
And it wasn't because the misses were bad, you know. Some were a little bit back rim, some rimmed out. Like, it weren't mm-hmm. bad misses. So I figured, you know what, and with the athleticism that he had and the court vision and the speed.
Yeah.
And he's utilizing that. He's even been playing well in the in the clutch.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this guy has what it takes to take up the mantle of being, you know, a Sacramento Kings star, whatever that means,
right.
For the future.
Yeah, I mean, I think they should be very encouraged by how he's fared this year. Like Dennis Smith, the efficiency isn't where you hope it's going to end up being. But again, rookie point guard who's playing behind George Hill for some portion of the year. I think the fact the Kings traded Hill was great. Like, this is, you're going nowhere this year. Like, let Fox take his lumps, just like the Mavs are letting Dennis Smith Jr. take his. And you're right, Mort. Like, he's playing well. They should be, I mean, I think they should consider that a draft success. And it's weird to say, like, the Kings have actually, you know, they've done well in the draft the last couple of years.
They draft well. It's just everything else that's done.
Right. But as you mentioned, you know, trading down from Marquise Chris to pick up number 13, Papianis, who they have since waived. That was a whiff. But they got Scal, who's playing. I mean, again, this is like, it's hard to tell what is just like, you're beating up on late season teams who don't give a damn and you're actually showing real flashes. But, you know, he hurt his hip recently, but he came back, I believe, last night. But he was playing really well before he went down with the hip injury. And then Bogdanović, as we mentioned earlier, is one of, if not their best player right now. So that leads into my next question, Mort. Do they have anyone else outside of Fox who you think is, like, you know, a guy they consider not necessarily a franchise superstar, but like a guy who fits into their long-term vision?
Yeah, I mentioned him before, Buddy Hield.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's a fantastic shooter. That one turned out true.
Yeah.
I think people overrated his ability to score at the next level. I thought he would win Rookie of the Year because he thought he would get a lot of shots in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
And it just didn't quite work out that way. And then he got to Sacramento, got more shots, and he played well. And for some reason, he hasn't been playing more than 24 minutes a game. But he's producing when he's out there. He's actually a decent rebounder as well for a guy that size. And I think when he starts to get, you know, starting caliber minutes,
mm-hmm.
and when he starts to round out his game a little bit more, because I think that he has some potential as a passer, he just needs to dig into that a little bit more.
Sure.
I wouldn't be surprised to see him become one of those guys who can go out and play 33, 35 minutes a night and be a consistent 20-point threat.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't either. It's interesting given how well Bogdanovich has played. You know, I feel like they brought Hield in last year and he took over as a starter. Now he's mostly come off the bench. He's only started 11 games this season. So it's interesting to see what's going to happen there. Like, are they going to just keep him in that six-man role where he can just be their microwave shooter off the bench? I don't know.
Yeah. I would like to see them play a little bit smaller and go with Bogdanovich at the three.
Fox, Hield, Bogdanovich.
Exactly. But the problem here becomes, as I mentioned before, Bogdanovich is not a strong rebounder. And when you go small, you would need to have your players be strong rebounders at the very least. Yeah. And if he doesn't rebound his position, that's a concern. So then you need to have the front court be some rebounding gobblers. They don't really have that.
Yeah, let's go into that front court. Willie Cauley-Stein is in the end of his third year, which means he'll be eligible for an extension this summer. I'm going to ask you the same question about him as I did about Devin Booker, minus the should they max him out, because the answer obviously is no. But do you think he's a guy worth signing to an extension, depending on the price?
Yeah, you said it right there, depending on the price. Look, I was very surprised at the NBA career, that Willie's had, because I thought he would be more of a defensive-oriented player coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you agree with this, but I feel that his offensive game has kind of surpassed his defensive game.
Yeah, and I agree.
I don't think he's as big a difference maker defensively as I thought he would be.
Right.
But then, out of nowhere, he became this guy who could, you know, get 13 points a game, basically, in 28 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I did not see that one coming. So, I mean, kudos to Willie for establishing that, at least. I think you re-sign him, but I think you would need him to basically give you a discount.
Mm-hmm.
I do not want to give him a large deal, nor do I want to give him like a long-term deal for a lot of money, because I'm just not sure what he is now. I mean, he's played over 4,500 minutes, and I'm still not sure what this guy is.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think, as you said, he came in with the reputation of being this like defensive-minded player who couldn't really do anything offensively. I think they kind of pigeonholed him into that role initially. I mean, his field goal percentage has dropped each of the past three seasons. But, I mean, it looks like he's taking more shots outside of, like, as a rookie, 60% of his shots came from within 3 feet of the basket. This year he's down to 44.6%. So, like, they're stretching him out. Like, he's taking almost 15% of his shots between 16 and 3-point range, which is, you know, not optimal. That's mathematically the worst shot, but like, good for them for letting him stretch his range out and seeing if that's a thing. Like, he's only taken 12 threes this year. He's hit three of them, but you know, if he can develop into that kind of stretch big man, that's going to unlock some upside that you wouldn't have expected coming into the NBA. So, I'm with you. I mean, I wouldn't, if his agent calls this summer, I'm not hanging up the phone immediately. I'm at least seeing like, all right, what do you consider to be a reasonable deal? You know, I'm not maxing him out. I don't think I'm giving him $20 million a year, but.
No.
But, you know, somewhere in the
world. I'm giving him at the very max, I'm giving him 12.
Yeah, I was going to say somewhere in the low teens.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then see how the market plays out this year. Like, if a guy like Lou Williams is taking eight, like, these agents might be like, oh shit, the money really dried up and it's not coming back until all of these bad contracts came off the books from 2016. So, like, they'll start to in 2019, but a lot of them go until 2020.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you, if you're Willie Cauley-Stein, maybe you say, like, all right, maybe I'm just going to test restricted free agency in 2019, take a qualifying offer, hit 2020, cash in. I mean, it's going to be a really interesting summer, not only for the free agents, but also this draft class of 2015. A lot of them have these decisions to make. Like, where can you maximize your earning potential the most?
Well, both for the classes of 14 and 15, because then you have the guys from 14 that enters restricted free agency. So basically, it's going to be interesting to see what's, you know, what happens with two draft classes. But I mean, in terms of Willie, I think he's a guy that you can at least count on to get production. And for a guy this young and a guy who plays center, that definitely comes with an extra little thing on the price tag.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, if you overpay for that, then you would have to expect some changes, or not changes, sorry, improvements, further yeah. improvements.
Mm-hmm.
Because where he's at right now is not something that you would want to overpay for. That would be where you end up with an albatross contract. Yeah,
totally agree. So, Mort, I'm going to ask you the same question to wrap Mavs up as I did, or sorry, wrap the Kings up as I did with the Mavs. Like the Mavs, they are currently, the Kings are number 7 right now. They have won 2 straight games to tank themselves backwards. So, again, you know, now Sacramento, if you're in that 7 range, again, you assume Ayton and Doncic are long gone. If Jackson, Porter, Bagley are gone, you're probably looking at Trae Young, Bamba, Wendell Carter as your theoretically like best players available.
Yeah, I reach. I reach. I reach for Mikal Bridges.
Yeah, I think so too, right?
Yeah, or Miles Bridges, whoever you prefer at that point in time.
Mm-hmm.
I think you reach. Not because of a need, though, but because the symmetry of how that roster is assembled, I think would maximize, you know, a Bridges acquisition. Mm-hmm. You have Buddy Hield, who can stretch the floor. You have De'Aaron Fox, who's a strong slasher and a true point guard. Then you've got these complementary big men who can suck in the defense. I just think that makes a lot of sense to get a Mikal Bridges into that situation, because he will burn you from the outside.
Mm-hmm.
So if he comes in and he adds that shooting element, and he's a wonderful defender, defender who can guard the two, the three, the four, even the point on occasion, that just gives you so much flexibility on both ends of the court. Like De'Aaron Fox, projected to become a great defender down the road as well.
Mm-hmm.
I just think he's going to be one of those glue guys,
yeah.
Especially for a team like Sacramento.
Yeah, right. Like, you have so many guys. Hield, you can project ultimately to be a 20-point per game scorer. Hopefully, Bogdanovich seems like he's going to be in the 15-20 range. Fox will probably be 15. If Willie Cauley-Stein continues developing, he'll be 15. You know, Scal, if he ever gets minutes, has some high upside as well. So you don't necessarily need another high-volume scorer. You got a bunch of big men. So, like, yeah, I mean, now we're talking about, like, do they draft for need? Do they draft for fit? But I'm not convinced that Bamba, Trae Young, Wendell Carter, like, yes, the group think has them above Mikal Bridges right now, but I'm not convinced they're in like a tier above him. I think
they're not.
Yeah. So at that point, if they're all in the same tier, then that's where you can use fit as the tiebreaker.
Yeah.
And it seems like Bridges is the guy who would translate. Not necessarily. I shouldn't say translate, but the guy who will like provide the most bang for his buck at that spot.
And that same thing could be true for Miles Bridges, who's an undersized 4.
Mm-hmm.
Because he would unlock a lot for them as well. Like, they don't have this playmaking 4.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a term we saw with Draymond Green. And we saw a lot of teams go after this playmaking 4 and then found out, oh, that player's not really there. Julius Randle is sort of the closest thing we're coming to that right now. Mm-hmm. I think.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, he's really, really interesting.
Yeah. But
Miles Bridges, I mean, look, I have Mikal Bridges over Miles, but we got to acknowledge that Miles, at least, has that potential in his back. He would be undersized, but he can handle the ball, he can shoot it, and he's very accustomed to playing the four. So, I'm not saying he's going to be Draymond Green. The Draymond Green comparison is out the door,
but he could...
play the four and handle the ball is what I'm saying.
Yeah, that makes total sense. All right, Mort, let's wrap things up with our crushes of the week. I'm going to let you go first.
Rondé Hollis-Jefferson. And that's, I mean, look, I'm not glad about picking a guy who can't shoot. I do not like that, but I got to give him credit. 15.8 points a game, 8.2 rebounds, 3 assists. This is over his last five, and he's doing that in just 26 minutes a game. He's hitting 53% from the field and 81% from the free throw line. And God damn it, Rondé, if you can hit 80 from the line, which you almost do for the entire season, you can take more threes. Come on.
You're just shouting him out because the Nets almost beat the Sixers last night, and you would have had just permanent shame on me.
Oh, yeah. No. But I'm basically expecting Philly to lose games at this point because you muck it up for yourself in the final 5 minutes.
Yeah, they really do. It's unreal. But no, RHJ is a very good pick. The whole Nets team, I mean, you were right to be high on them you weren't right to be high on them as a playoff team coming into the year, but they have a lot of good young pieces that are only going to get better. This guy.
Where would they have been if they had been healthy, though? Like, let's just
tell in the playoffs.
No, but they would have been close. No. They could easily have been on the bubble.
Yeah, they could have been Charlotte.
I would have taken that.
That's fair. All right, my crush, I'm going to cheat with one, but we'll start with the actual NBA player, and that is Taurean Prince.
Yeah.
38 points, 7 assists, 6 rebounds in a loss against Chicago on Sunday. 7 threes in that game as well. Over his last three, he's averaging 28.3 points, 8 rebounds, 5.3 assists, 5.3 threes, almost a steal and a block in 35 minutes a game.
Yeah.
He kind of slumped earlier in the season, especially in January. Seemed like he lost his mojo a little bit, but he's certainly rediscovered it. So, you know, the Hawks, it's in the very beginning of a long rebuild, and we will say bye, Felicia, to them in an upcoming episode. But I think they should be rightly encouraged by what Taurean Prince has done, especially as of late. Also, we have to give a shout-out to the UMBC Retrievers, the first number 16 seed ever to be the number one seed. Also, they're personally near and dear to my heart because now Georgetown is not the biggest March Madness choker in the DMV region. So thank you, Virginia. Now no one could ever make fun of us again because you choked so much harder. But yeah, unreal performance from those guys. I like that they wouldn't even like celebrate that much after the game. Like I would expect, you know, like streamers coming down. But like they just seemed like they expected to win, which is great. Like, good for them. I hope they win the whole damn thing. My bracket's already on fire. So let's go. Team Chaos. Let's do it.
I'm so glad I didn't fill out a bracket this year. It would have been busted by the first five or six games.
Yeah. I was perfect through six, and then everything just went to total shit. Thank you, my faith in Arizona. That really did not help me. When I put them in my final four, but
I had the weirdest bracket last year. I went 9-9 on the first one, and then I dropped that. Yeah, I was glad. I was like, I was feeling myself, and then I lost the next six.
Yeah,
and I was like, I'm not even gonna check back on this bracket.
I know, it's how it always goes. Brutal. Well, yeah. Shout out to UMBC. We wish you the best in the rest of your journey because. You lit Twitter on fire Friday night. So well done there. So that's going to do it for this episode. Thank you all for tuning in. Please be sure to follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We'd love any feedback. We're being hosted this year on FanRag Sports, so check them out on Twitter at FanRag Sports and for their NBA content at FRS Hoops with a Z. Until next time, I'm Brian Zaporik, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, Brian. I'm going to go back and watch more awful basketball.
Enjoy. Happy St. Paddy's Day.
Thank you. Likewise, friend.